Good morning. Let's get straight to markets.
Take a look at the impact for the indices.
Factual. Succinct. All you need to know before your trading day starts. Subscribe to our newsletter, CNBC's Daily Open.
The Valley. Hello and welcome to Beyond the Valley, the podcast that explores the world of tech. I'm Tom Chitty and with me is CNBC senior tech correspondent Arjun Karpal. We finished 2023 previewing a big year for cryptocurrency, and so it's already proved. After months of gossip and rumour, the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, has officially approved spot Bitcoin ETFs. We're going to discuss what this means for Bitcoin and crypto as a whole, and we'll also hear about Arjun's trip to the Crypto Finance Conference in the luxury Swiss ski resort of St. Moritz, where he, along with many crypto investors, heard the big news.
Beyond the Valley.
Happy to be back, Arjun, back in the UK, or do you miss the mountains?
Yeah, no, I'm not built for, you know, mega cold weather. I know I live in the UK, but I don't like the weather. I don't like the cold. But do you know what? That train ride, my goodness, up to St. Moritz from Zurich is phenomenal. It's breathtaking. Do you know one of the things that was amazing on the train was, so there was a restaurant on the train and you could order a sort of Swiss cheese fondue on the train, a mini one, not like a full-blown massive pot, but you could order a mini cheese fondue on the train.
As in with like all the heating apparatus?
No, so I think it's, I'm not sure. I looked at the picture. It looks like sort of a little pot that they sort of melt and then bring out. And you've got to, you know, you've got to really quickly go for it. There's not, you know, it's not huge, but, you know, grazing boards
before
and
it,
all sorts.
Before it hardens up.
Yeah, before it hardens. Yeah, quite amazing, actually. But yeah, no, so. But
that would have been good for your Instagram reel.
I think I did take a couple of videos. You know, there's lots of content on, if anyone's interested in that train ride, by the way, in the views, they can check out my Instagram and see the lovely video. Shameless plug.
Coming up later in the episode, for our listeners, we'll discuss the big tech topics to look out for in the first half of this year. But before we discuss anything else, we've got to hear Arjun's stat of the week, which is...
So I'm just playing with the rules a bit here, but I'm not going to give you a stat. I'll give you a date and then maybe the stat later. So November 2021.
Okay. I actually already know the answer to that.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
Wait, actually, that's quite a bold shout.
You've laid it out now. So when we get to the end and you give your answer, it better be right.
All right, so let's get started. After months of speculation, the spot Bitcoin ETF has been approved. Arjun, you were surrounded by crypto enthusiasts when the news broke. What was the immediate reaction to the announcement?
Well, it was a wild time because it wasn't as straightforward as an immediate announcement. It was, firstly, earlier on, I arrived on a Tuesday, at the 9th of January. And that night, the SEC, their X account, had put a post out saying that the Bitcoin ETF had been approved. Very quickly later, it had been removed, and the agency, the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, which needs to approve these Bitcoin exchange-traded funds, they said that their account was compromised. And that, in fact, a Bitcoin ETF hadn't been approved. So come Wednesday morning, the start of the conference, Wednesday the 10th of January, I was starting to catch up with people from the night before. And it sounded like the champagne corks had been popped and very quickly put back in the bottles once they had seen the fact that the Bitcoin ETF hadn't been approved. Let me just give you a little bit of color from what was going on Tuesday night when that false announcement came up. I had a chance to catch up with Melton Demiroir. She's the head of strategy at CoinShares. She's a big name in the crypto industry. And she gave me a little insight into the celebrations or the pre-celebrations that were going on Tuesday night.
Well, we walked into the lobby bar right as the tweet came out, and everyone was ecstatic. We've been idiotically pursuing this idea, this vision of creating an easy way for investors to access Bitcoin through a cost-efficient vehicle that can be traded right in a brokerage account. It's great for folks like my dad. My dad doesn't want a Bitcoin wallet. He wants to go into his existing brokerage account and get exposure to Bitcoin without having to worry about all the other details. So we're ecstatic. And then 5 minutes later, after all the drinks were ordered, very sad. But look, I think, if you were a screenwriter, like, you couldn't write the narrative of this industry. It's wild. It's preposterous. It's crazy.
So the shots were ordered, and I think they came, and the SEC clarified that it wasn't indeed happening. But then Wednesday night, Wednesday night Switzerland time, I'm talking about, the SEC actually passed and approved the Bitcoin ETF. So Thursday morning, when I was catching up with some new faces, certainly, it sounded like the celebrations were, interestingly, someone told me the celebrations were tame to start off with because they were unsure if this was another false kind of start from the SEC. And then once they figured out this is the real deal, I think the celebrations were going on strong, no doubt. A few sore heads on the Thursday morning. I was in bed by 9:30, Tom. So...
Good for you. Well behaved. You've got a long week coming up. Just in terms of, obviously, there's a little bit of confusion and uncertainty, but ultimately, there's a lot of, it sounds like there was a lot to celebrate for people in the crypto world. Generally, though, before the announcement was finalized, or at least confirmed, what was the vibe like at the conference?
So this crypto finance conference in St. Moritz is supposed to bring together sort of the crypto industry and then more traditional financial players. And last year, so at the start of 2023, when I attended this thing, it was a very downbeat mood. The big crypto exchange FTX had collapsed. Bitcoin was trading somewhere near $17,000. The mood was not good in the camp. Everyone had a bad 2022. They were sort of concerned about what 2023 would bring. Lo and behold, 2023 was actually, a very, very good year in the end. Bitcoin rallied about 150%. A lot of the, fund managers who were there managing these crypto funds were, very happy. They saw that the big problems that had happened in 2022 were pretty much out the way. And they were just waiting for this Bitcoin ETF now, which happened as well. So generally, the mood very optimistic. I think people were celebrating by skiing on the slopes there and all sorts of things. So it was definitely a very different mood to 2023.
I read this morning $4.6 billion worth of shares traded as of Thursday afternoon, and that would suggest that there's quite a lot of strong sentiment for these new ETFs. What is your initial sort of take on kind of the take up, shall we say?
Yeah, so there certainly seems to be demand for it. The take up seems pretty strong at this point, and I think the reason is because of what an exchange traded fund is. There's many exchange ETFs in this world, and effectively they're a product that investors can invest in that track a certain basket of assets, or in the case of the Bitcoin ETF, it's tracking one asset, and that is Bitcoin. And what it means is investors, through their brokerage accounts, through their trading apps, can just buy this Bitcoin ETF without having to go onto a cryptocurrency exchange and then physically, go and buy the actual Bitcoin and store that digital currency in a digital wallet or what's known as cold storage offline. So that means that you don't actually have to own Bitcoin to get exposure to its price movements. And that's seen by the industry as a huge deal because, owning the actual Bitcoin, going on exchanges, was seen as something that might limit the broader population from participating in the crypto markets. The other thing is it also probably put off a lot of big traditional players who would have never touched cryptocurrencies before. But now there's an ETF. Many see it as giving a sort of layer of legitimacy to Bitcoin and allowing some of these big institutions, these big investors to now get involved in Bitcoin. And the theory here is that this could bring in a whole new wave of investors to the market. And so that's why there's so much excitement. Just to lay this out perhaps much more eloquently than I have, I caught up with Sheila Warren at the conference. She's the CEO of the Crypto Council, Crypto Council for Innovation. And she was just talking to me about her views on why she thinks this is a big deal.
If this does happen, I think to your point, this is a watershed moment, no question about it. It's going to usher in a lot of institutional capital. It's going to change the dynamic of this asset class completely.
Sheila Warren, they're calling it a watershed moment, and that's very much how it's been described. Let's see, you know, the initial excitement, yes, when that dies down. Let's see if demand continues to remain strong, of course.
Yeah, I read on Morning Brew, of all places, but that there was a great line in their daily email, which was Bitcoin is essentially putting on a tie and agreeing to go to work at its dad's insurance firm for the summer until the whole buying a hamburger with crypto thing takes off.
That's brilliant.
Which I thought was a really good way of explaining it in layman's terms. Anyway, so. The one thing I did want to discuss, and I know that a few people have picked up on this, particularly in the office, actually, that the price of Bitcoin, I think for some people, you know, they thought, oh, well, as soon as the ETF is approved, it's going to go through the roof because that's it, confirmed, it's going to happen. But we didn't really see a huge increase in the price of Bitcoin. Okay, we've seen a gradual increase, but straight off the back of the news, there was a bit of actually a flat line and a slight even decrease. So is it almost like Bitcoin investors off the back of this ETF gossip and rumor had already sort of jumped on the bandwagon and that it had already been priced in ahead of the announcement?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Bitcoin had a more than 150% rally in 2023. A lot of that was in anticipation of this ETF. And remember, these issuers of the ETF need to underpin their ETF with actual Bitcoin. And so they would have, in preparation for their ETFs being listed in trade, would have been buying up Bitcoin too, no doubt, to underpin the ETF. So, you know, we saw a huge rally last year, and I think that's kind of that was kind of in the price already, and that's why you didn't see so much reaction. What was fascinating, though, was the reaction in the price you did see on Ether, the digital currency linked to the Ethereum blockchain. That, I think, sort of immediately after spiked around 10% at the time. Now, why? That's because I think there's speculation now that the Securities and Exchange Commission in the US could greenlight an Ether ETF next, now that it's opened the door for Bitcoin. So that's why you saw, I think, the spike in Ether, which I thought was the more interesting price movement at the time.
But I do want to sort of temper, I hate to be the sort of the party pooper, but it's interesting to see that Vanguard, the largest provider of mutual funds, for anyone that doesn't know, is kind of what exchange-traded funds are like, but on the stock market. But they said they had no plans to make the new batch of spot Bitcoin ETFs available on its platform to its brokerage clients, which I thought was interesting. And we also seen the SEC chair say in a statement on Wednesday that the approvals were not an endorsement of Bitcoin, calling it a speculative, volatile asset. So I find it strange that on one hand they have approved these spot Bitcoin ETFs, but on the other hand they're saying, well, it's still, you know, it's still a risky investment, even though you're not necessarily investing in Bitcoin.
Yeah, it really is. It was fascinating because it was sort of like the SEC and I'm paraphrasing the chair Gary Gensler, who's the chair of the SEC, I'm paraphrasing sort of what he was saying in his statement, but it was very much like, just because we approve this Bitcoin ETF doesn't mean we like it, and doesn't mean that we are going to now approve a bunch of other crypto assets to come to market. He said, and this is from the quote, that the decision to approve the Bitcoin ETF, it should in no way signal the commission's willingness to approve listing standards for crypto securities. And he said, while we approve the listing and trading of certain spot Bitcoin ETP shares, those are exchange traded products, today we did not approve or endorse Bitcoin. Now, over the years, the SEC, and in particular Gary Gensler, has been very opposed to Bitcoin. He's held up the approval of this Bitcoin ETF, which is how the industry sees it. But certainly, it doesn't change the stance of the SEC. They are now not pro-crypto. And I want to unpack this statement because it links to what I was just talking about with the Ether excitement. So the reason, and if you read Chair Gensler's statement, the reason the SEC was okay to greenlight the Bitcoin ETF is because they classify, and Bitcoin has been classified in the US as a commodity, not a security. Now, commodities and securities are subject to different sets of regulations in the US. You know, gold is a commodity, stocks are securities. Bitcoin is seen as a commodity. However, the SEC sees the vast majority of all other cryptocurrencies as securities, and that could complicate the matter in terms of them approving an ETF. Gary Gensler was very specific that they approve the Bitcoin ETF because it is seen as a commodity. And that's where this comment about it should in no way signal the commission's willingness to approve listing standards for crypto asset securities comes from. Now, that's where an Ether ETF gets complicated. There is potentially a decision on the Ether ETF in May, but this classification really muddies the water. So it could make potentially an ETH ETF less likely in the near term than a Bitcoin ETF was. Anyways, I caught up with people on the ground about this. One of those was Bill Tai. He's the chair of ACTI and also a very high profile VC and crypto investor. And I asked him sort of about his views on whether an Ether ETF would come to market.
One, Mr. Gensler has been fantastic at setting low expectations. So I think he's doing that with this as well. And I think there's one distinction that I think people have to look at, which is that Bitcoin clearly has been bucketed as a commodity. Ethereum, you know, there's still some question. Is it a security? Is it a commodity? And I think until that's resolved, it cannot be looked at exactly like the Bitcoin product, in terms of, you know, how do you structure an ETF around it. But it's, you know, it's all possible.
So would you say that in terms of an ETH ETF, the likelihood is a bit less this year? It's not as clear-cut as the Bitcoin?
It's not as clear-cut. I do think that it's not out of the range of possibility, but there are additional factors to consider around that one because of its classification.
So you hear his views a little bit about, you know, that it's not as clear cut, he says, as Bitcoin. And so I think the market has obviously placing bets here that Ether could be the next one, and they don't want to miss out on if there's a huge price rise as a result. So that's really what's happening. And I thought that was the fascinating price movement there.
For a moment, go back to Bitcoin to finish off. We know that the halving is coming up in April, which essentially, if people don't know, it halves the price that Bitcoin miners can get for mining Bitcoin, which reduces supply of Bitcoin onto the market and obviously increases demand, or that's the theory anyway. With the ETF and with the halving coming up in a few months' time, what can we expect with the price of Bitcoin, do you think?
Yeah, so Bitcoin works in mysterious cycles, but so far they've been relatively consistent in its very young history. halving happens every 4 years, written into Bitcoin's code. The next one is slated for April 2024. And in the past, when halving has happened, it's usually preceded, so come before, a new bull run to all-time highs for Bitcoin. Now, those all-time highs take a little bit of time to get to, quite a few months, but it comes before. And what we've got now is a fascinating situation, you know, on two fronts. One, you now have the ETF excitement, plus the halving, which hasn't happened before, in terms of that could be support, very supportive for Bitcoin prices. But on the flip side, you now have Bitcoin in a macroeconomic environment that it's never been in before. One where inflation still is running high, one where interest rates are high. It's never traded in that before. So do these historical cycles hold? And that's the big question. So again, of course, was there on the ground speaking to the industry, what is their views? And you can imagine, given the sort of current situation, they're quite bullish. I want to bring you a couple comments. First one here from Fred Thiel, the CEO of Marathon Digital Holdings. They're one of the biggest Bitcoin miners in the world. Here's what he had to say on his outlook for the price.
We estimate just internally that we'll definitely hit the all-time high levels by the end of this year, the prior all-time highs. And then we'll see into next year what happens beyond that.
So he thinks some new all-time highs could be hit in 2024. And that seems to be a view from across the board. Anthony Scaramucci, the CEO of Skybridge Capital and a big crypto investor, also spoke to me up at St. Moritz. And here was his outlook.
So I've been humbled by life and markets. And so when I make these predictions, they don't turn out too well. You know, I'll end up in this ice bath out here. But here's what I do believe. Because of the broader nature of ownership and because of the pushing of the Wall Street sales forces, Bitcoin will go through its all-time high. And remember, we see it as digital gold. And so if you look at the market capitalization of gold at $13 trillion, there's no reason why Bitcoin couldn't be 50 or 60% of that market capitalization. So that implies a 10x price over the next decade. But could Bitcoin be $100,000, which is more or less a double or plus a little bit more than a double by this time next year? I do believe that. But I've been wrong so many times before. You probably shouldn't listen to me on that. But I do believe that that's why we have so much Bitcoin exposure.
He was very keen to say that he has been wrong in the past on prices, but he does feel that Bitcoin could be at $100,000 next year. And look, that is not an outlier view.
Ambition to me is about doing better.
I think ambition creates a pathway.
The best advice I can give someone starting off a career is don't have a career, have lots of careers, try loads of different things.
Talk to people and put your ambition out there.
I don't feel that I've hit peak ambition because it's a learning journey.
CNBC is where ambition meets opportunity. What does living ambitiously mean to you? Hear it from our CNBC anchors, reporters, and global business leaders on CNBC.com.
In fact, there are many calling for $100,000 on Bitcoin this year. Me and my colleague Ryan Brown, our colleague, we published a piece at the start of this year speaking to actually people both inside and outside the crypto industry. And it was quite surprising because everyone was bullish. Even those who have traditionally been quite bearish on Bitcoin were bullish this year round because of the ETF in particular, because of the halving, and also because of potentially a view. There are some economists who believe that the central banks of this world will cut interest rates. And when interest rates are cut, that's usually very supportive for risky assets like stocks, but also like Bitcoin as well. And so we had price calls for 2024 ranging from about $60,000 all the way up to about $250,000 this year. And so that's where we're at with the price. You know, I couldn't tell you where it's going. It's anybody's guess, but that's the views from the industry.
Okay. Lots to keep an eye on. And I'm sure we'll be talking about crypto next week and the following weeks after that. But let's leave crypto there for the moment and look ahead to the first half of 2024 and what our listeners should keep an eye on in the world of tech.
Beyond the Valley.
There's a few things, Tom. Well, obviously, I'll just throw crypto out there because we're here now. The halving's coming in April. That's pretty obvious. So that's going to be something that we no doubt talk about again. But also, you know, it's a big year in the world for elections. And so that's gonna bring to the fore a lot about misinformation online, on social platforms, across internet platforms. They will be under heavy, heavy scrutiny this year. And I think added to the mix, generative AI, because all of a sudden there's this potential ability to create things like deepfakes. Remember that episode we did? We talked about if deepfakes could cause a national security crisis, you know, taking it to the extreme. But certainly deepfakes could play a role in misinformation online created by AI. So those two things, I think, are going to be a huge deal this year as well.
And I know our colleague Karen Gilchrist wrote a very good article on the website yesterday or the day before on this very subject. So if you want to read more about it, then you can find that there as well. But yeah, I mean, it's something that I think, and I know I'm sure it's going to be talked about next week at Davos, the threat to democracy, the threat to, you know, free and fair elections. It's going to be a huge problem, and how they deal with that is anyone's guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you sort of try to fight AI with AI? That's going to be certainly, you know, there are tools being developed, you know, AI tools being developed to help identify what may or may not have been created by AI. So there's that. And just generally, you know, the development of artificial intelligence is going to be in focus this year. How quickly is it moving? We saw rapid development last year. Who are the leaders? Who are the winners? Where are investors investing in? All of that is going to be pretty top of mind this year. There's so much. I mean, I keep going on. But China is going to be a big topic again. You know, the tech companies there have had a really rough time in the past few years. Investors have lost complete confidence in the ability for these tech companies to grow at the rapid paces they have grown in the past because of tighter regulation and also broadly a not as rosy outlook for the Chinese economy. And so, again, I think people are going to be looking at the Chinese market, given it's so huge, and seeing where companies like Alibaba and Tencent and JD and others find their growth from. That's going to be another huge topic as well.
Where do you see the gaming industry going in the first 6 months of 2024?
Yeah, there's a potential actually, you know, in certain markets like China, I've seen sort of a gaming recovery take hold. Or starting to take hold. So that would be positive for the broader gaming market. I think one of the interesting topics this year outside of China is going to be the console market and what happens there. Obviously, you know, you've got Microsoft with the Xbox, Sony with the PlayStation, and Nintendo with the Nintendo Switch. And one of the things that analysts are expecting this year, I spoke to a few very recently, and they were saying that they're thinking Nintendo will release a brand new Switch this year, Nintendo Switch 2. And that could reinvigorate some of the sales of the company and bring in new players as well. So gaming is going to be one to watch. A lot going on in that space. How does Microsoft move forward after the Activision Blizzard deal closed? What are they going to be doing with that? You know, how are they positioning for the future of things like cloud gaming? And other things. So that's going to be a fascinating one to watch as well.
And one other thing that I wanted to ask you about was the metaverse. I know it's a bit off piece, but what's happening with the metaverse? You could rephrase it as what's going wrong with the metaverse? Because it's been a bit of a clunky process, and I imagine 2024 is going to be a big year for whether it gets sort of mainstream adoption.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything going massively wrong with it. I just think that it's not as moved as fast as people had thought it would. And the problem is, you know, you can go out and buy a headset for maybe, you know, they're not mega cheap, but they're not mega expensive. You know, if you're in that market for consumer electronics, you know. And so I think the issue is what's the big use right now? Why do you want one? What's going to make you get up, go get your headset, put it on your head, fire it up, open an app, and then start doing something in virtual reality. What is that that's going to make you do that? And I think the experiences aren't there yet. I think what's interesting, so I've been trying out a PlayStation VR 2 very recently. Just wanted to try the product for a week or so and just see how it's going. Now, that has been built for a very specific use. You know that if you're a consumer, you're going to purchase that for the sole purpose of gaming. And the headset has been designed as such and everything around it for the purpose of gaming. Now, if you're into gaming, I can see the appeal of that. It is a really interesting product. And some of the experiences on that are, you know, something that, you know, most of us would have never experienced before. And so it makes sense. Now, when you look at some of the other general headsets out there, you know, there's a myriad use cases of those. You know, there could be gaming, there could be education, there could be work, there could be all sorts of stuff. But I think that those experiences that are offered by VR yet aren't as polished as they need to be. I remember trying very recently, it was one of Meta's headsets, one of the Quest headsets, and it was some sort of rock climbing thing. It was really cool, and I was having sort of a good time, but it was very glitchy. I found it very glitchy, and that's not, and you know, that's something across all the headsets. There are glitches still, and so I think that experience isn't quite there yet. And so that's something that will need to be improved. Let's see, you know, and that comes with adoption, consumer adoption. If consumers are keen on it, then developers will develop stuff for it. And so that's going to be, I think, a big deal. Or we'll see how that sort of develops this year. You know, there's that big conference we go to, Tom, the Mobile World Congress. You know, we might hear a bit more about Metaverse there as well. And then on top of that, you know, it's linked to the development of other consumer electronics as well. A big deal this year is going to be phones. What happens with phones?
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, what do you want in your phone?
Have you heard any rumors
in your phone?
Well, this is the problem with the smartphone. Do people want anything else? I mean, they feel like they've got everything they need. I mean, it's all doing, all singing, all dancing.
I mean, the cameras are just absolutely ridiculous now.
Your camera is absolutely ridiculous. That, you know, those photos you shot from Saint Moritz, wow. You know,
yeah.
who needs a professional photographer these days?
Yeah, I took a night shot on the current device I'm using, and my goodness, it was like...
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, you laugh. Our camera operator at the time, we were doing a shot sort of outside, and... with the mountains in the background for a live TV shot, and the sun had sort of appeared, and so, you know, I was backlit, and our poor camera operator was blasting his light as much as he can in my face to sort of, you know, counteract the backlight. And he's like, oh, it's just this, you know, you're coming out, you know, a little bit, you know, dark with the backlight and stuff. I said, Gert, his name is, I said, Gert, you should probably just use a smartphone. The AI in it would just sort it out, you know, the lighting. And he was like, yeah, I probably should. I don't need to carry a 20-kilo kit around then.
I mean, we are getting, you know, I don't think it's that long or that far away until that might be a reality. So, good old Gert. We love Gert. Okay, let's leave it there for the pod. And but before we go, of course, we have got to do stat of the week.
And you've got to get this right. November 2021. It's a date, obviously playing a bit fast and loose with the rules here, but it's a date.
Is it November the 9th, 2021?
Do you know what? You're asking me a question I don't know the answer to. Listen, I got back late because last night, all right?
Yeah, all right. You didn't sleep in at all this morning for this podcast, but we'll gloss over that. November the 9th, 2021 was when Bitcoin reached its record high, just south of $70,000 per Bitcoin. I think it's 68 or something like that.
Brilliant.
Is that brilliant? Am I right?
Absolutely brilliant, Tom. Well done.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. And start as we mean to go on, you know, New Year's resolution is to not get any stat of the week wrong.
What a great start to the year for you.
Our listeners could start taking bets maybe on whether I'm going to get it this week.
I mean, what? I'm so glad you got it, because it would have been really awkward after your really bold claim at the start of the show that you knew the answer.
Thankfully, I did my research this week, so I came prepared. And I didn't know that that was what your stat of the week was going to be. But
I didn't either until I woke up this morning.
Which is only about 5 minutes before we started recording.
Yeah, Yeah, look, I told you, I was knackered. I was knackered. It was
Do you know how long
it takes? You have to fly from London to Zurich, right, first. This is my journey. You fly from London to Zurich, and then you get off at Zurich Airport, and then it's about, you take three trains up to St. Moritz, totaling around 3 hours and 45 minutes.
That's almost three times the length of your flight.
Yeah. But as I said, beautiful train ride. So it sort of balances it out somewhat. You sort of, you're really dreading the long journey, but then, you know, you see the serenity around you with you know, lakes and snow and mountains and stuff.
The options for content, social content, the fondue. Yeah. I mean, let's get the violin back out, shall we?
Do you know what should have been my stat of the week? See if you can guess what this is. 150 Swiss francs.
The price of the set menu at the Michelin star restaurant you went to.
I wish it was a set menu. Obviously I didn't order this, you know, the T&E department, would, you know, lose their mind, but, it was the price of a Wagyu burger on the menu, just the burger, not a set menu, at one of the hotels. So that's just give you a sense of the luxury nature of St. Moritz, which you're there every weekend, though, aren't you, Tom? So
that, yeah, it's a home away from home for me. I'm glad you've managed to pronounce St. Moritz correctly there now. So we had a bit of a debate in the office about the pronunciation. So you'll be glad to hear.
Though the announcer on the train did say St. Moritz. So I don't know. I think the debate's still open.
Debate's still open. If you want to tell us how to correctly pronounce St. Moritz, then please do by emailing at beyondthevalley@cnbc.com. And if you have any other questions on tech, then also do email us and we will attempt to answer them on the pod. But that's it for now. Thank you, Arjun.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll be back next week for another episode of Beyond the Valley. Goodbye.
Beyond the Valley.